Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption, What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Lauren Conlon, and welcome to Corruption, What Happened to Grant Solomon. Before we get into things, I've been asked a few questions about the first two episodes that I'd like to address. Like, Lauren, are you insinuating Aaron Solomon paid off these alleged three men somehow? Lauren, did anyone try to find these three men? Well, I want to clarify, I'm not insinuating anything. My goal here is to tell you the facts and then let you decide what to think for yourself. And no, to my knowledge, law enforcement did not try to find these three men, as there's nothing on record of it in the police reports. On this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be focusing on the lack of medical investigation done at the hospital, the lack of autopsy, the confusing reports of Grant's injuries listed at the scene and at the hospital, and then the inconsistencies on the death certificate. I do this with a special guest, Dr. Maria Ryan, former CEO of Cottage Hospital in New Hampshire. We're going to break down the accident and Grant's injuries. And I want to note right now that I am looking at the medical forms from Sumner Regional Hospital. So I'm going to read you the official cause of death. Quote, cardiac arrest, cause unspecified, and blunt trauma arrest with traumatic brain injury. Quote. This is important because I was confused at first with cardiac arrest and heart failure. I thought they were the same thing. They're different. You probably know that. I did not. So I wanted to put that out there just in case. Now, I'm also staring at the death certificate. Now, the death certificate states the cause of death as, quote, multiple blunt force trauma,
and run over by automobile, quote. Plus, there's a little place where it says, describe how the injury occurred. And it says, quote, run over by car, quote. So the last time I checked, if you get run over by a car, you probably would have some broken bones. Maybe it crushed your rib cage. I'm not a medical professional, but yeah, that doesn't check out. I also say this to Dr. Maria during our interview, but I want to say it again here. Sumner Regional was contacted through FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, to turn over all of these records back in 2020, only a few months after Grant died. But they denied this request. So Angie Solomon had to get a subpoena to make this happen. Why deny a request like this to a family who just wants answers? With that said, let's take a listen to my discussion with Dr. Maria Ryan.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Okay, everyone. I'm here with Dr. Maria Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Maria.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Lauren. You're doing such important work.
Thank you so much. Can you just give everyone a little bit of your background?
Absolutely. So I've been in healthcare for 30 years. I started as a registered nurse and then kept continuing with my education. I became a board certified nurse practitioner. A nurse practitioner can practice medicine independently. I did most of my clinical experience in the emergency department. And I also have a PhD in healthcare administration because I was a CEO of a hospital.
I was going to say, but my,
I have CEO. A lot of experience in emergency medicine, and I've seen it all. I've had to collect forensic evidence on murder victims because they were found dead and they bring them into the emergency department not knowing what happened. I've had to collect forensics on rape victims and all kinds of traumas in motor vehicle accidents to rule out whether they were accidents or whether there was nefarious activities going on.
Okay. So this is very perfect then that I have you. And I briefed you on this and, you know, we discussed it last week. Again, just briefly. Now, you have the Sumner Regional medical records. I sent this to you and you said to me, this looks very flimsy. It looks like it's missing information.
Yes. One of the things we like to hear is when I get an EMS call coming in that we have, this would have been what's called a code one because CPR was in progress. So it's the ultimate emergency. Mm-hmm. So you want the emergency staff to be prepped. But a couple of things as a provider, I would want to know what happened. How is the body? Like, for instance, if there was a T-bone accident, that tells me what type of injuries I can expect. So it's very, very important that I get described to me everything, but I don't see in the EMS record nor in the medical record exactly what happened. Was the body under a wheel? Did the front of the car or back of the car, did it cause crush injuries? I don't have that detail, but I have signs to show that there was a crushing injury because in the medical record, I can tell that the EMS almost immediately did a needle decompression. So they assumed that there was a crush injury to the chest. And the reason, one of the reasons Grant Solomon may have not been breathing is because either his lungs or his heart had fluid around it. And when they did the needle decompression, it looks like they were doing it more in the lungs. I can only tell that by the diagram. Okay. We make diagrams and we try to pinpoint exactly everything we did to the body. Not only we want to see what the body looked like, upon arrival in the emergency department, but also what we did to it. So when it goes to the medical examiner, if they see a hole in the anticubital space on the arm, that's where I try to start an IV or something else. You don't want the medical examiner thinking, oh my God, did somebody give this person a drug or some other thing?
Right, right.
So I definitely see that EMS tried a needle decompression, and I found that they said no blood or air came out. Well, that's a good sign. So there wasn't, you know, if there was a crushing injury to those lungs and the lungs were collapsed, you would hear some air escape. So it doesn't look like that was affected at all. And also no blood, which is really good. There wasn't a, what we call a hemothorax.
Right.
So those are all good. I saw documentation, no flail chest. Again, good sign for Grant in the respect that, okay, it doesn't seem like there was a crushing injury to the chest. What is of note is the significant head injury. He had such a blow to the back of his head that it was called an open compound fracture. Normally, if we see this in the leg, what an open or a compound fracture means is part of the bone is protruding from the skin. Literally, they said the skull fracture was so much that, you know, it was pretty open in the back of his head. Oh. And it was noted at the scene he had blood from his nose and his mouth. So that's a significant head injury. And that probably caused him not to breathe, because a lot of people don't, they think of lungs for breathing, but our breathing centers are in the brain.
Okay.
Everything that regulates our body really comes from the brain and the brain stem. So his death was most likely caused by the significant head injury.
And his official cause of death was heart failure due to the head injury. Am I correct?
That's not accurate. I did not. And if you could send me that, I did not find that was a cause of death at all. The heart failure piece.
I do have that on a form that was, let me see. It's on there. It's on the Sumner. It's on the
well, big, I saw cardiopulmonary arrest. He did die of cardiopulmonary arrest.
Sorry, I misspoke. Yep, so heart failure and cardio arrest is not the same thing. Okay.
It's not the same thing.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. That's okay.
Yeah. All right. So, but this is due to the head trauma that he experienced.
It really, every point points to the head injury of being the reason he died. The most unfortunate thing is the lack of information in the EMS report, the physician's report, and then the fact that there was no autopsy. It was really significant for me that there was no autopsy. I know my state of New Hampshire, and I've worked in other states. Mm-hmm. If you have an untimely death, especially anybody under the age 65, then you need to do an autopsy. The only time we wouldn't do an autopsy if the young person had cancer or a known death that was coming.
Right.
My daughter's fiance died a few years ago of ALS. And so there was no autopsy, even though he was only 40 years old, because he had a documented terminal illness. But if he all of a sudden was found dead or got in a motor vehicle accident under suspicious circumstances, and I tell you why it's suspicious. He pulls up next to his father in a car. Mm-hmm. The father continues to stay in his own car working, he says. He looks up, sees Grant coming into the back. It sounds like the back seat. It just says the back of the car to get the equipment. Mm-hmm. Next thing he knows, he looks up and the vehicle's gone. So he starts getting out of his car and he hears a large crash. Nobody actually witnessed this. Did the car door, the back door, was it open and the car wasn't in park and the car door hit Grant and pulled him under?
Dr. Maria, we all don't know. His story has changed so many times. And I sent you also, you're taking this from the police report. And this, what you just stated, I studied this in detail, not as much. I mean, obviously I studied this more than the medical stuff because I don't quite understand the medical stuff, but this came from what Aaron Solomon told an officer, that his son got out. And because, again, his own statement was slightly different. He never says, oh, I got out. And, you know, after I heard this loud crash, he never said that himself. So,
yeah. So it's The other thing that I find a failure in is that the police department, as far as I know, I couldn't find it, never did a reconstruction of the accident. They simply did a diagram showing the car in pictorial, not pictures, but a pictorial of the car at the top of the hill, midsection, and then down at the ditch. That's not a full reconstruction. A reconstruction would be you try to see how Grant ended up under the car. What is plausible? Could it only happen if the car door was open and he got hit to be pulled under the car? Because if he's just standing on the side of the car and it wasn't in park and it starts to go down the hill, he could have jumped out of the way. So there was no, as far as I know, reconstruction of the accident to say plausibility.
Dr. Maria, there 100% was not a reconstruction of the accident. They also have somebody on staff at the Gallatin Police Department that could do that. And unbeknownst to everybody, they did not call them in to do something like this. Now, I have a couple questions. I showed you the pictures from the police report. This ditch is very rocky, full of, tons of sharp rocks. It's not super deep. From what I can tell from these pictures and from what I've read, not super deep. However, again, this is me speculating, I'm not accusing anybody. If somebody was to be shoved, right? And I don't think that's super plausible, perhaps only because Grant was so much bigger than his father. But even if someone was able to be shoved down there, I don't see how you could get such a head injury like that.
And I'm not
right.
Yeah, could have occurred from those rocks. Or again, if the back door was open and it started rolling down and somehow hit Grant and he fell very hard on that pavement, that is plausible. It's almost, though, like a blunt force trauma injury. Oh. So that's why reconstruction is so important and autopsy is so important. It didn't seem like a thorough investigation. I've been involved in all these. Believe me, the emergency department personnel are hand in hand with the police department all the time with cases like this.
Right.
Because we give our expertise, they give their expertise, we give them opinions, they give us opinions, they may suggest, please keep that sheet that they were brought in on. The way we collect evidence. So we have a very symbiotic relationship. And it just seems, I can tell you, one officer said he was staying on scene to interview the witnesses. The next thing, another officer says no witnesses found.
I know.
So did the first officer have some there? And then, but where is the report?
No, there was no. The officers, listen, you haven't listened to the second podcast I did, but I got a witness. So the officers did not. Again, me with my musical theater degree, I was able to put all of this together. I keep joking about that, but I want to just read to you because I have this report open. So it does say reason for visit diagnosis, cardiac arrest, cause unspecified. Immediately, if you say cause unspecified, wouldn't that say autopsy, like it, in general, right? If you even write isn't that conflicting?
That was on admission. They knew he was in cardiopulmonary arrest because he had CPR in progress. So we know he's in what we call arrest. And so they knew that upon admission. They didn't really know why. Their theory, I'm sure, although it's not quite specified, is the head injury caused the cardiopulmonary arrest.
It says contusion to the head. I don't know what that means specifically.
Contusion. Yeah, it's a little more than a contusion because Dr. Kimberly and her name just...
Plourde.
Did document the significance of that head injury and the fact it was open skull fracture. That's pretty significant.
She did say it was open skull fracture. And that leads you to believe... blunt force trauma to the head. If you have an open skull fracture,
but and that could be a variety of things. Hitting the head at such a force, which is more unlikely, on the pavement or on when he got down there on a sharp jagged rock, that could absolutely cause that. And of course we know in other assaults, blunt force trauma can happen with weapons as well.
Yes, there was, I won't get into I'll save that for another day, yeah. Another speculation about that. But I do want to ask you, so Grant was getting over COVID. He was having trouble with his lungs, trouble breathing. But you said during the procedure they did with the needle, the lungs appeared to be fine.
Well, as far as no air released and no blood. So it's not like you're doing a diagnostic CAT scan to look at whether there's scar tissue of the lung. We do a needle decompression to see if there's fluid or blood inhibiting the lungs from working. So they did that immediately. I was very impressed that EMS had the training to do that, but they didn't have any of those markers. So they're trying to save this young person's life. And sometimes just a little bit of fluid either in the lungs or around the heart and the pericardium, and you release it, you can get somebody's heart beating again.
But it was clear that wasn't the issue. It was the head injury, which is also what probably, or not probably, I should say, it knocked him out because he was pretty much out cold in and out. He obviously had a pulse at this point. I want to know, from an autopsy, what do you think they could possibly be able to uncover with this if there was foul play?
Well, you know, autopsies tell us a lot, along with a reconstruction of the accident, because you could tell, like, the force. Again, we're so blind on this because we don't know if the truck actually fell on a piece of him. It says he was trapped and he needed to get extricated. I finally found that from pre-hospital records, that when we use the term extricated, it usually means like we couldn't have just pulled him out from under the car. There wasn't that the vehicle or something needed to be lifted or a car door removed or something.
Right. Okay.
But an autopsy could tell a lot about it. And usually the medical examiner, again, works hand in hand with the police. They try to reconstruct how fast the vehicle could have been going if you're not in park and it rolls down the hill. Really, how fast could that have gone? Just from my vast experience on prior accidents, it couldn't have been more to 20, 30 miles an hour. And that's really stretching it. That hill, of course, we don't have dimensions. Another thing missing. I'd love to teach these courses. Like, how exactly far was that hill? Like, how many meters, how many feet was it? That ditch, I'm like you. You really can't tell the perspective from those pictures. It actually looks like a little divot with some rocks.
It doesn't look like a crazy ditch. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much missing from this, and that's very clear. Yeah. But I want to also point out to you that there was another podcast called the Crime Solvers Podcast, who are retired detectives, and they looked into this truck and they said this Toyota Tacoma that Grant had, it got, you know, 5-star safety ratings, and there's supposed to be, and there is in this truck, to our knowledge, a parking pole that is supposed to stop the truck from rolling if it's not in park or whatever. And this parking pole, it wasn't defective. So that's the other thing. How did this something like this happen if the truck was not defective?
Yeah, it's almost like everybody, I hate to say this, got lazy. You know, I used to teach this to the nurses in the emergency department because they're the most important people sometimes. They get the person right off the stretcher. So they need to keep things intact. You know, we need to put things in brown bags. We need to, you know, the whole thing. There's a whole forensic thing. So I was very particular about it because to me, I have a potential victim in front of me and I want justice for them. So it's very particular about forensic gathering. Mm. But there's so much missing in this case, including I don't see, you brought up such a good point. You don't see anybody commenting on, okay, I'm going to get somebody to look at this truck and look at whether the brakes worked or whether this pulling system worked. Mm-hmm. This needs further investigation. A young man, an 18-year-old man, lost his life under very odd circumstances. Right. So more work has to be done. And the sooner the better, right? Through time, things get lost.
You're right.
Memories fade.
You're right.
So I'm hoping that the district attorney will look into this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, obviously. And, you know, something else I want to just bring up quickly is that Angie Solomon obviously got to see her son postmortem and made the comment. She was afraid. She thought he'd be crushed, you know, his chest crushed, like, because she was under the impression that he was stuck under the wheel or something. And she said his body, besides his head injury and like a mark on his cheek and maybe a bruise from sliding on his hip, you can see it in the diagram, his body was essentially perfect. So yeah. I think that the focus is the head trauma.
Yeah.
And to figure, and again, with an autopsy, it sounds like we might be able to get a better idea if there was foul play or not, or if this trauma was caused by an object, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And you want to make sure that vehicle is safe. Right? Say this is a terrible accident and they reconstruct it and they say it's plausible that this could have happened. Then why did the truck roll down the hill when there's supposed to be a safety mechanism? So it needs unbiased eyes to look at the whole thing.
I agree. And this was published in the last episode, but somebody from the Ward Performance Institute, an employee, did come outside when he saw Aaron Solomon on the phone. And I don't know if it was Aaron's lack of understanding of what was happening to his own son that projected onto this employee, but the employee seemed very confused, did not know the urgency behind this. So he kind of just was like, what's going on? And then he went inside to call his manager and say, hey, you better come down here. There's been an accident. So I don't know if his behavior triggered everyone else's behavior to be calm, but to me, this is just so crazy that nobody thought to go down there and actually help besides these supposed three men that no one has found since. So
I would think the police put that out on the airwaves, right? Three men sought as witnesses to this accident. I don't know any of that. Like, obviously it's not in any record, but normally that happens, right? You want actual witnesses. I cannot tell what the body looked like. And that is so frustrating for somebody like me in emergency medicine. We usually get these very full reports from EMS, you know, the body was positioned like this, there was a tire on it, or his head, there was a huge rock underneath with blood on it, or something.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I'll say on this, and I don't know if this is important to note, maybe you tell me, but they did request all of these medical records through the Freedom of Information Act, and they were actually denied the first time by the hospital, and then they had to get a subpoena to get these records. So I don't know if that is an admission of guilt, like we don't want to release these to you, and I'm assuming legally they had to give them, the hospital, I mean, had to give them everything that they had, and they didn't leave anything out, but to your knowledge, you said it just looks so incomplete and just not.
It does
thorough.
Look incomplete on a variety from EMS record doesn't look complete. The hospital record doesn't look complete. Certainly the police records don't. And one of the police records, it was severely redacted. And I don't understand that. I don't understand any of it.
It's again, for me to be able to look at this and just notice this right off the bat, it's insane. So, Dr. Maria, is there anything you want to add just in general?
No, just that there's an 18-year-old boy who lost his life and it's really under very odd circumstances. So there should be further investigation.
Thank you so much. I think most of us agree with this. Just again, not pointing fingers, simply commenting on the lack of investigation and the lack of work done to investigate this poor, sweet 18-year-old boy's death. So thank you again. I really appreciate it. You are a wealth of knowledge.
You're doing yeoman's work. Good
you
job.
You heard Dr. Maria. It seems like this is the consensus. Horrible, lazy police work and a lack of medical investigation. The death certificate makes no sense at all to me. And it's clear that Sumner Regional did a sloppy job with these forms and just taking care of Grant in general. So please, please go to the GoFundMe Justice for Grant and consider making a donation, as this is imperative to get the ball rolling for an exhumation and an independent autopsy, something that absolutely should have been done from the start. So thanks for listening and stay tuned for another episode of Corruption. What happened to Grant Solomon?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.